Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a great guest for the show today, Michael Dodsworth. He comes from a deep engineering background, building all kinds of great stuff. Today, he is founder and CEO of Fanfare. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to have you. So let's start off with your background. I was brief there. Is there anything else you'd like the audience to know more about you leading into today's discussion, other than your extensive engineering background?
I think everyone can probably tell at this point, I'm not from around these parts. So we were just talking off air about my accent. So I found myself on these shores through a set of different acquisitions. So the first company I joined out of college was this small content management company called Coral. We were scooped up pretty quickly by Salesforce in 2007, moved out to San Francisco, spent some amazing years at Salesforce as they were growing, some really gnarly issues of scale there at Salesforce, worked with some amazing people there, and then found my way through into the consumer space. I went to Optimizely for a few years, and then went into the live event ticketing space. So joined at this time I joined, it was just a slide deck and a CEO, and joined as the first engineer at Rival. And we were sought to fix the issue with, you know, everyone faces when they go and try and buy tickets for any kind of show. It's the same poor experience. It's the same terrible queuing experience where bots and bad actors come in and scoop up all of the inventory. We've all been through this pain, right? Like the multiple tabs open, the terrible experience. So Rival was going after the likes of Ticketmaster. And then Fast forward to the start of the pandemic, we were acquired by Ticketmaster, as things always go. And from that experience, having built a platform to deal with those kind of Taylor Swift on sale moments, kept seeing the same thing in retail. Collectibles, sneakers, footwear, streetwear, like all kinds of different categories with the same issue, which is where you have fans, where you have people willing to dedicate their time to show up in great numbers, you have this terrible consumer experience. And the brands aren't happy, the consumers are happy. So Fanfare is, our goal is to make it easy for brands to run these things and for take away some of that consumer pain that we've all felt.
Gotcha. So let's double click on that, because I love this discussion that led into Rival and Ticketmaster. Let's talk about some of the different aspects of the ticket buying experience that make it so loathsome. We've all been through it, but let's try to itemize some of those, the dimensions of that.
Yeah, we all know it's probably going to be Ticketmaster you're going to when you're buying tickets. Like, that's a problem just on its own. The fact that there is no choice. You are going to one vendor almost always for these tickets. And then it's a platform that's not really been built with these kind of events and this kind of scale of event in mind, which is strange given how dominant they are. But it's a really hard problem to wrap your arms around. So they're sitting on a lot of technical debt. They're sitting on a lot of organizational debt. And when a Taylor Swift pre-sale happens, they're not equipped to deal with these kind of events. So it's really just a gnarly distributed systems scaling issue that when you're sitting on 20, 30 years worth of technical debt, you just can't deal with properly.
And there's other issues that I think are there as well in this area. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like things like Ticketmaster are very prone to organized bad behavior. It seems like, isn't there like mass buying, let's take like a Taylor Swift concert, mass purchasing of things, and then people end up buying things on third-party sites and they don't know where they've got their ticket from, and there's this whole weird marketplace that most people don't understand unless they go to a lot of concerts and they learn the problems.
It's a really, interestingly, there's so many different problems wrapped up in that. And it feels the same as a consumer. It just feels like whenever I go and try and buy something, it's always available for 100 times the price, 10x the price on some secondary site before I've even had a chance to go through the process. And that's wrapped up in a few things. So sometimes the venues and the teams will actually cede those tickets out to someone else. So they will often offload risk to ticket brokers. So often a good chunk of the venue is already ticketed. These tickets are already out with someone else. And that's a real problem of venues and team owners not being able to determine risk properly. So the brokers are used to take that on. So that's one problem. And I think just bots and bad actors, there's a huge incentive for people to either jam up the process or just to scoop things up and sell it at 10x the price, 100x the price. So people find a way. Like people will always, when there's a huge incentive like that, they will do incredible things to exploit whatever it is they can exploit. So you find, especially now, bots and bad actors are prevalent wherever there's scarcity, wherever they can, you can make a few dollars from selling things on secondary sites on like StockX or whatever it is, you'll find people doing that. So again, not only do you have the scaling issues to take on, you're also in a battle with an ever increasingly like sophisticated set of bad actors who are able to build bots, to buy bots, to rent bots, to do all these things that you really don't want them to do as a brand and a vendor.
Now, help us understand where Fanfare, first of all, the ecosystem that exists out there that's emerged over the years, and then where Fanfare fits in it. So there's the distribution, maybe break it, simplify it for us, where the procurement of the tickets, the stadium says, we want to sell the tickets, and then they go through a middleman, but then there's other middle people, and then finally the end user. So give us a little bit of a lay of the land there.
Sure. So we sit in front of whatever vendor you're using to convert. So if that's Ticketmaster, like there's a fairly involved process where you have to select seats. You have to go through a process with Ticketmaster to get through. It's everything ahead of the Fanfare takes responsibility for. So making sure that the people showing up are real people, making sure they're real humans and not bots, making sure that these people are managed properly so we don't bring down Ticketmaster, we don't bring down whatever store you have, whatever particular store you're on, whether it's Shopify or whatever it is, we don't bring that down. And then doing interesting things in that moment. So a good example, I think, is Nike. So Nike had a giant drop that they did for the Lost and Founds a few years ago, where they had 3 million people show up for roughly around 50,000 pairs of sneakers. And that's an incredibly nasty issue to deal with just in that moment. But Nike and whoever runs these types of events tend to only reach and find out about the people who transact. So they only really learn about the 50,000 people who showed up who were lucky. Everyone else is left out in the cold. There's no information sharing that happens there. You don't find out who these people are. Like, what kind of interest do they have? What kind of things would they buy if they were available? What kind of price points matter to these people? All of those questions just get completely waylaid and pushed out to the side, just in favor of just these 50,000 people that win. So I feel like there's a huge missed opportunity there to try and reach all of these really just unlucky VIPs, right? If you've tried to get your Travis Scott's 5 times in a row and failed, it's not because you're not a fan of the brand. It's not that you're not a fan of Travis Scott. It's that you're just really bad at getting these sneakers. You just have bad luck, right? So that's really important information, I think, for brands to be able to capture and use.
So if I'm a brand and say, and give us an example of who a brand might be, like a band like Taylor Swift or a team or a league.
Yeah, or brands, we're focused on streetwear and footwear right now because that's where a lot of the problems are. Brands like Denim Tears, like Mischief, they're able to create these moments where an enormous community and audience show up for an event, show up for a product on sale. And then that comes with all of these challenges. And if you think, why didn't Nike solve this problem? Why didn't Ticketmaster solve this problem? Like, why didn't some smallish brand that just happen to be incredible storytellers and bring a ton of people to their launches solve this problem. Like, they have no resources to battle some of these issues. So that's really where we come in.
Okay, so should I understand this as merch primarily, but not tickets? Taylor Swift wouldn't she, or another artist who's a performance artist, they wouldn't use fanfare directly for their performance, but something brand oriented that you make merch and things like that.
Yeah, we're looking at the smaller end of the scale right now.
Okay.
We do eventually want to push out into live tickets.
Sure.
Because I see there's enormous problems there. But there is for sure a lot of problems with smallish brands who are better than ever. They're able to tap into influencers, social media, and just viral moments around their brands. And they're just not equipped on the actual on sale to deal with these good problems.
Yeah, it is, because it sounds like you found a niche space. And in that niche, are there many other players, or are the other players focusing on the different types of events?
There's a couple of players out there. There's a couple of players in the drop exclusive space. There's a lot more in the queuing space. So people who are focused on like the Ticketmaster style issues where they line people up, our largest competitor there is the one that you'll see in front of Ticketmaster, in front of Disney, in front of all of these ticketing places that have these issues, you'll see this vendor. So yeah, there's people in this space, but it is niche. And I feel like this is an ever-expanding model that brands and vendors are moving into because they're able to tap into larger and larger audiences. I think the ability for a brand to reach 3 million people, 4 million people for a launch 10 years ago, what would people, I don't even know how people would conceive of doing that a few years ago. Like, now it's not actually beyond the reach of a smallish brand. Like, you can find an influencer and someone who has a following who can give you that. I think a good example, there's a soap brand called Dr. Squatch here in LA. And Dr. Squatch did a launch a month ago where they collabed with Sydney Sweeney. And they were selling a soap that was infused with Sydney Sweeney's bathwater. And that's right. So what is this moment, right? Like, why are they doing this? What is this? Why are they selling soap infused with someone's bathwater? But like, they sold out within 60 seconds. Their site crashed when it went on sale. These bars of soap are now trading on eBay for £2,000. These are... they created
wild.
A moment. They created a moment. And I think more and more brands can reach for this model, but it comes with some really problematic hazards, right? Like, you create a moment where people are anxious to get your stuff and then you fall over. They are particularly angry. They're particularly frustrated. If your site falls down just during a 9 to 5, no big deal. Someone comes back in a couple of hours, they get their thing. If you fall down during a Switch 2 launch, bad times. Like, you are going to find yourself at the bad end of some negative sentiment online.
Yeah, it's managing a brand. It's really the relationship between a company and their customer base. And it's an emotional relationship. And it's one of those things where just if something slightly goes wrong, it may or may not be the fault of the brand, but it's something you really have to manage if you want that good relationship. And if you're a company that's doing one of these sort of pop-up events or moments or these launches, you're clearly a brand that cares about your relationship with your audience. So you want to manage that properly. So I can see where you guys are fitting in. I guess your promise is saying, hey, look, you deserve to have the ability to manage these things in a way that's not going to be rife with all of these problems. And we give you the ability to do that easily.
Yeah, I think if you want to foster fandom, and we think this is a real important model, it's a really powerful model. If you can build a community around your brand, get people really engaged and excited about what the brand is doing and the story that the brand is telling, then you're drawing a lot of people into the wider catalog. You have repeat customers who keep coming back again and again. But like you say, if you fail in that moment and people feel like their time, their dedication to the brand has just been squandered, you're not treating them with respect, then they will just disappear and you've lost those people.
No, it seems like in building this, you have probably two main experiences to worry about from a software interface perspective. You have the brand who's trying to create and manage this stuff, and they need to be able to do that easily. But then you've got the end user who either sees an app or a website or something that they want to have a specialized focus experience with that brand that feels like it's coming from them. Is that about right?
Yeah, we sit in front or inside the product page, and then you're going through a fanfare experience. So you sign up, We manage all of those users, we capture their information. Over time, we'll start improving and adding things to that experience. So live streaming, over time, community chat, recommendations. You didn't get this, but maybe you want these items because we see you're interested in size 9 Travis Scott, so we can recommend things to you in the future. That kind of thing, I think that's the goal of fanfare.
And then what do some of your ambitions look like as a product? So first of all, right now, where do you fall on the services versus self-serve kind of situations? On one extreme, a lot of early stage technology companies, you still have a lot of humans in the loop who are helping things come together. And then as you mature, hopefully you're ending up toward a very self-serve experience where people just log on or subscribe and they can just execute it. Where do you fall today on that spectrum?
Yeah, so there's a little involvement from us just making sure that the experience is bedded in, that everything is integrated properly. The goal of the next few months is to make it completely self-serve. So you can switch us on, you can embed us in your Shopify store, in your standalone store, whatever it is, and you can just set these experiences up. You can set up announcements, you can choreograph the whole thing, and then we will run that experience for you and pass people through to convert. So the idea is that it's very simple to set up and get off to the races and start running these kind of events.
Yeah. And in terms of you and the others on your leadership team leading this product, great service, what are some of the things that is clearly very innovative and you clearly need some kind of a internal mentality of being innovative and team members who can really push the envelope and really be on board with what you need to? What are some of the things that you kind of do to encourage that and to manage an innovative team?
Yeah, I've been through startups multiple times. I've been incredibly fortunate to work with some incredible people in those startups. So you see what to do, and you see, and sometimes in larger companies, like the things that slow people down and cause people to get tripped up. I think people need to have autonomy always. Like, it's a huge time sap to feel like you need approval and to go through like odious processes to get anything done. I definitely found that as Salesforce in particular started to grow, like more and more of those hurdles are put in your way and slower the team gets. I also love that at startups, you are so close to the impact that you're having. You are so close to the customers. Like, we're talking to customers all the time and getting early feedback and be able to react and feel people's pain and address their pain points. Again, like larger company, you are so far from that end user that you don't experience any of that pain most of the time. So I think that's really important. We know that we're going after a problem where like scale is an enormous concern. 5 million people show up today. Maybe it's 10 million a year from now. Maybe it's 20 million a year from then. Like, we need to make sure that we're from the very beginning baking in this idea that we're able to scale as a technology platform, that we're able to adapt to whatever changes come down the pike. And that for me is front and foremost, because all of these platforms that you see that are not able to scale, they've built up some legacy and some debt and some weight that causes them not to be able to move quickly and to scale and deal with these kind of issues. So that's, again, really important to me that we think about this stuff from the ground up. And that's a continued focus. Like, we need to be able to deal with these kind of huge thundering herd moments And if we drop the ball there, like brands will quickly just go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's like you've got to really get it right and make sure that the relationship you're building with your base is the same thing that you're trying to foster here. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been speaking with Michael Dodsworth of Fanfare. Where do people get started with Fanfare and also get in touch with you if they want to reach out?
I'm always on LinkedIn for my sins, so please reach out, book an appointment, grab some time. I'd love to talk about this stuff to anyone that will listen, so happy to jump on a call. And yeah, if you head over to fanfare.io, we've started pushing case studies and playbooks because we know that brands, when they're thinking about using this model, often want to know what pitfalls they might fall into, what to avoid, what to do, what not to do. So you can find some of those /playbook on fanfare.io.
Fanfare.io, and that's the one with the purple logo, right? Great stuff. This is really exciting. We look forward to seeing how this continues to develop over the years. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Great to meet you.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.